I enjoy reading the, I call them voices from the other side, beings who I think have attained some deep spiritual insights. I just find it so inspiring. It's better than CNN. You know, if a person were to listen to news cycles, it would seem we're pretty hopeless human beings. And then you read something like this, and the mind becomes hopeful. So this is a, this is from, who is it, Nisargadatta, I think? I think it's Nisargadatta. This was his realization. The main change was in the mind. It became motionless and silent, responding quickly, but not perpetuating the response. Spontaneity became a way of life. The real became natural, and the natural became real. And above all, infinite affection, love, dark and quiet, radiating in all directions, embracing all, making all interesting and beautiful, significant and auspicious.
Wow.
And whenever, I mean, if you read any, you know, lives of the saints or whoever, it's always this, this deep, deep love, isn't it? We always refer to that. Now, if you try to manufacture that, you're just caught in desire, right? But if you have no, I guess if one has no sense of aspiration and possibility, then it seems like you're just sort of doing kind of psychological adjustments to become more functional, which to me is okay. But there must be more than that. You know, just tweaking my psyche a bit so I'm more efficient. This doesn't seem to me to be a raison d'etre. This gives me tremendous kind of encouragement. So the main change was in the mind. It became motionless and silent, responding quickly but not perpetuating the response. I like that, not perpetuating the response. You know how we can just echo and regurgitate some response again and again and again when we're caught. Spontaneity became a way of life. The real became natural, and the natural became real. And above all, infinite affection, love, dark and quiet, radiating in all directions, embracing all, making all interesting and beautiful, significant and auspicious. And certainly I felt that with Ajahn Chah, that he had this tremendous warmth and compassion, but he was tough. And that combination of fearlessness and love was it was both very inviting and energizing, because he would, you know, he really asked us to practice hard. He didn't suffer fools. What is it, gladly or kindly? Lightly, suffer fools lightly. And yeah, there was just a tremendous compassion. So his strength was never coming from a place where you felt he's just having a go at you. So his strength was really telling you where it's at. And actually one felt, thank you. Thanks for taking the time to point that out to me. Because it was coming from a kind of deep and loving place, I felt. That's my perception. So how do you do it? That's the question. We must therefore begin with the analysis of desire. What do I want? Can my desire be gratified by the possession of objects? Objects, are they what I seek? So in a Buddhist context, I would say that's the five khandhas. Anything which can be known, bodily feeling, emotion, perceptions, thoughts, ideas, modes of consciousness, they all, to me, objective, like objects. So the vision of a tree, a thought in the mind, an emotion of sadness, these are all objects. So we would define them as the five khandhas. That's how I would read this myself. Can my desire be gratified by the possession of objects? Objects, are they what I seek? Do they contain what I seek? Let us observe what happens when a desire is satisfied. We see that the gratification of a desire is nothing but its death, and that therefore, when we are in search of bliss, we really are pursuing nothing but the death of desire. This proves that our ultimate desire is non-desire. But non-desire appears to our normal consciousness as being blankness. And yet it is in this blankness that we must try to probe with open eyes so as to discover its true character. In fact, this nothingness is experienced by everybody in infinitesimal gaps which occur between thoughts. Each time one desire dies, giving place to the next. If from time to time we experience moments of stillness and deep attention turned towards these gaps of nothingness, little by little the emptiness will reveal itself as being full, and finally as supreme plenitude. One should adopt this attitude as often and as clearly as possible, thereby allowing it to be more penetrating and effective. With this in view, one should be available, ceaselessly questioning oneself, calmly observing one's own behavior without passion. A new and non-objective outlook may then progressively prevail on us, and we may come to understand that we are not the ego. We may then, with a complete and new awareness, taste the unexpected flavor of those moments of non-desire which will be revealed as being plenitude, silence, and peace. This flavor, which is only fleeting at first, will become more constant and vigorous until that time when it will appear as a reality which carries us, enfolds us, and is our very substance. The exercise of this pure attention implies the complete elimination of all elements from the past, thus allowing the authentic purity of the present to be completely grasped. We must forget everything and wait, yet wait for nothing. This entails a state of complete receptivity which seizes and is open to the complete, eternal, and perfect newness of each moment. I've been reading that for 20 years. I just go back to that and back. It's like one of these, you know, profound, for me at least, profound things that you can work on that for, like that's enough for a lifetime, huh? It kind of just, the suggestions there. And they're actually, they're very hard to do, these kind of suggestions, just like noticing the gap between a thought and noticing non-desire. And then in waiting, like you can see how important patience is, because you know, you read the first bit, right? Deep, silent, loving. Oh yeah, I want that. Yeah. And then what do I get? I get some crappy mind state. That's not deep and loving. I want the other. And then there's desire, aversion to the negative, and the pursuit of the positive. And that's still kind of like looking for objects. So that's why, I think the skillful teaching of the Buddha and many masters is this question of non-desire and desire, rather than the particular objective experience I'm having, the objective experience of pain or displeasure or whatever. And that's where the ideas of attachment and non-attachment, letting go, desire, non-desire, they're all around this sense of going out into the objective world, going out into, like if I'm lost in thinking, then I'm out into the thought world, as it were. And then when I awaken, oh, this is a mood of nervousness or something. Oh, yeah, so that feels, I come home again. And coming home again is a kind of constant, steady practice that you do. And that's not from desire. You remember that, as I've been saying. You know, you remember to be awake rather than try to get rid of what you think you shouldn't be. And that requires a lot of patience and like humility, kindness. You see where all those, what we're talking about when we talk about the heart practices. Once more, mm-hmm. These are deep ideas. They don't, they don't. We must therefore begin with the analysis of desire. What do I want? Can my desire be gratified by the possession of objects? And again, it's not just the possession of a new laptop, right? Objects here is more broad. Can my desire be gratified by the possession of objects? Objects, are they what I seek? Do they contain what I seek? Let us observe what happens when a desire is satisfied. We see that the gratification of a desire is nothing but its death, and therefore, when we are in search of bliss, we really are pursuing nothing but the death of desire. This proves that our ultimate desire is non-desire. But non-desire appears to our normal consciousness as being blankness. And yet, it is in this blankness that we must try to probe with open eyes so as to discover its true nature. In fact, this nothingness is experienced by everybody in infinitesimal gaps which occur between thoughts, each time one desire dies, giving place to the next. If from time to time we experience moments of stillness and deep attention turned towards these gaps of nothingness, little by little, the emptiness will reveal itself as being full, and finally, as supreme plenitude. One should adopt this attitude as often and as clearly as possible, thereby allowing it to be more penetrating and effective. With this in view, one should be available, ceaselessly questioning oneself, calmly observing one's own behavior without passion. A new and non-objective outlook may then progressively prevail on us, and we may come to understand that we are not the ego. We may then, with a complete and new awareness, taste the unexpected flavor of these moments of non-desire, which will be revealed as being plenitude, silence, and peace. This flavor, which is only fleeting at first, will become more constant and vigorous until that time when it will appear as a reality which carries us, enfolds us, and is our very substance. The exercise of this pure attention implies the complete elimination of all elements from the past, thus allowing the authentic purity of the present to be completely grasped. We must forget everything and wait, yet wait for nothing. This entails a state of complete receptivity which seizes and is open to the complete, eternal, and perfect newness of each moment. See, that's another way to meditate. You just read something like that and you just allow those ideas to inform your observation. Because sometimes objective meditations where you're choosing an object and that are so much fraught with trying to control or trying to become, and sometimes they really don't work for people. And yet, to be able to ground yourself in the moment is very important. So these are things you have to figure out yourself. Like, to have a good grounding practice into the present moment, which is not fraught with desire, that would be good. You know, if I have a sense of bodily awareness or metta practice or breath, say, which grounds me into the present moment and brings me to the present moment in a kind of composed and still way, that would be great to be able to do. But if it becomes so tense and, you know, I'm trying so hard and I feel frustrated, then maybe a more spacious kind of meditation. And it kind of depends, time of day and what's going on. All right, let's do some sitting.